This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is about something that lights your fire when nothing else will.
This is the Mark Divine Show. This show, we're going to discover and dive in and discuss what makes the world's most inspirational, compassionate, and resilient leaders so courageous.
Transform the nature and functioning of our own brain for the better.
Go put your virtues in action. Be the best version of yourself.
Life is a practice. Day by day, get wiser and stronger and grow.
How do you understand enough about your own mind and psychology and emotions, and how do you develop a reflective awareness practice to actually get in the driver's seat of your own mind?
We go in-depth with people from all walks of life, martial arts grandmasters, meditative monks, CEOs, military leaders, stoic philosophers, proud survivors, and more. Every episode turns our guest experience into actionable insights that you can learn from and lead a life filled with compassion and courage.
I started putting all these little tools in my pocket, started to reflect a lot and meditate.
There has to be a balance between movement and rest.
It all starts with us. We cultivate these qualities in ourselves. We become a beacon of light for others in the world. Please join us on the journey. The Mark Divine Show. Hoo-yah.
Well, in this show, we'll talk a little about the trials and tribulations of my vehicle having situations.
Some
There's
range
a problem
anxiety
with it.
And a plug-in hybrid.
And we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk all things Porsche and all the old school days and the real story behind Newman and
Robert Redford
and the Porsche, crushed Porsche, and that whole story that was told in my doc with George Valerio. First, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Get on. Welcome to CarCast, Matt Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hello.
There.
How are you?
Flustered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you'll notice my phone is in here because I never bring my phone in the studio because it would go off and then I would look at it and then I couldn't give my full attention to the audience. But today I brought it in because I got to send a text to the guy over at Galpin Ford saying Lincoln's dead again.
Lincoln's dead. So there was some car trouble with the Lincoln, the Aviator hybrid, which we thought was just the regular battery, the 12-volt battery, the accessory battery, not the powertrain battery.
Right. So there's it can plug in. It can get 22 miles sort of max on the plug-ins. Somewhere between like 19 and 22, maybe 22, 23 is probably the highest I've seen it. It's also kind of curious, but somebody would have an answer. You know, sometimes you plug it in overnight on the 240 and you come down and it's 19, and sometimes you come down and it's 23, you know. But either way, it's kind of a, I would just call it a tank extender.
Yeah.
If somebody, and we talked about it off the air, if somebody could get to 50, that's a little bit of a game changer because I live, 9 miles, 11 miles from here. The 19 is not going to get it there and back kind of thing.
Yeah.
You could get me to 50, I could get there and back on just and go home and plug it in.
And it's weird how the plug-in hybrids, I don't know why, they're all sort of coming in around this like 18 to 20, 22-mile range, you know, Porsche Cayenne, new Range Rover, you know, the Aviator. I'm not sure why the larger SUVs couldn't have maybe just a little bit larger battery, maybe just a packaging issue, or maybe we're all just sort of satisfied with 19 miles of range, but
I am not because
I wouldn't be, but you know, I mean, it was interesting to try.
It's not enough to get from Malibu to here.
But what they're trying to do is say, hey, if your Lincoln Aviator has 400 miles of range,
mm-hmm.
the gas engine version, hypothetically, is 19 miles per gallon, and the hybrid version averages out to 21 miles per gallon. So the overall mm-hmm. MPG and cost is a little bit lower for you if you're plugging it in and taking advantage of the battery, which you've been doing for some time now. So and when it shifts sort of on and off, you know, when it needs a battery and when it doesn't need the battery and gives you some of the range, or then, yeah, because it's not 10% of the range, because that has almost like a 400-mile range or close to it. So if it gave you 10%, if it gave you 40 miles of range, then that's an interesting number. But 20 miles is a little less interesting. So I was talking with Alistair from Edmunds.com going, when are we going to maybe see a 40, 50, 60-mile plug-in hybrid range? Or mm-hmm. when are we going to start to see the larger luxury SUVs go pure EV? And he said, other than the Rivian that he drove recently, the Rivian SUV, which also still has about a year waiting list.
Yeah, I've not even seen the Rivian SUV. I've just seen the truck.
It's cool.
There's a Rivian truck that's up on Bring a Trailer,
yeah.
by the way.
There's a few.
It was like at $100,000.
A few popping up. Now, we had this discussion when you get into EVs, and we can get into this at a later time, but he was saying that it's not an incredibly efficient vehicle. It's big, it's heavy, it has a massive battery, and when they got like something like 317 miles of range, which is on average with most cars, but the amount of battery required to get that range mm-hmm. is almost double like a Tesla Model 3.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas if you're driving your Tesla, you may plug it in a couple times a week.
Mm-hmm.
The Rivian, you kind of top off every night because it's a big battery. And to get that much range, you have to top it off. So if you're going to even just the fast charger in the shopping mall or out here, you know, at Century City or Third Street Promenade, you plug in your Tesla and you get 20 miles of range at dinner, you don't get that with the Rivian. It takes a lot more power to charge that battery. So he was just saying that it's not range anxiety. It's plug-in anxiety. It's you got to top it off more than usual because it takes more power off the grid to bring that battery up to the same amount of miles. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. Efficiency is what we're going to be starting to look at when it comes to these battery charging.
Yeah, you know, we're right there, but we're not quite there yet. And I always say my next car is going to be electric, but I want an SUV.
It's probably still going to be, they're going to start trickling out over a year time mm-hmm. and probably become more available in 2 years. You might be looking at. Because I think you leased your Lincoln for like a 24-month lease. You might be looking at something else
mm-hmm.
for another 2-year lease. And then you'll have more options when it comes to a full EV.
All right. Well, let's see if I can put myself in a better mood by talking Porsches. We have a guest today, George Valerio. George is all about the Porsches. So when we did the doc about Newman and Redford was telling the story about finding an old crushed Porsche to send over to Newman's house and put it in his foyer, he's the guy who procured it. But he's also a guy who's got a 917. He's also a guy who's been racing a 906 every year in Monterey. Since the first year, the historic.
We got to get into this story because we were chatting a little bit off the air, and he was telling me about being there with Dan Gurney. Gurney offering some advice on how to take some of the turns at that place and how to make that car go fast.
Really?
Yeah. So some very interesting stuff there.
Well, he's just pulling up to the microphone. So Good to see you, George.
Nice to see you.
Do you still have the 917?
No.
Oh.
If I had the 917, I wouldn't even be talking to you. I'd be fishing playing golf.
What was the livery on the 917?
It was brand new. I purchased it in parts from the factory. It was the last 917 that the factory had in parts.
What year was that?
September of 74.
And you say in parts, so chassis, body, engine, you literally just got everything in parts?
According to the legal paperwork, what I bought from the factory was 1917K, chassis number 917036, complete less engine and transmission, shipped freight prepaid to San Francisco via Pan American Airways. And Dick Reventlo,
sure,
Lance Reventlo's brother.
Mm-hmm. Of Scarab fame.
Yes. Saw me at the first vintage car race in Monterey with my 906.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little tiny for sale sign on the windshield because you're not supposed to advertise. And he says, why are you selling a 906? I said, I want to get a 917 that I can drive on the street.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he said, I just bought my RSR from Frau Bear. I'll give you her phone number because they have a 917K, which is the coupe, and then a 917PA, which was the Spider, the open car.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new. So he says, I just saw it there 2 months ago. So I got home from the races on Monday.
The 917 Spider's the Can-Am version?
Yeah. They called them the PA.
Right. I'll call it TA.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
So I arranged to buy the car, and at that time, Porsche was going through a huge management problem, and it seems like they fired all of the higher echelon people. Frau Bear, who was the racing parts department parts person to talk to, we made the deal with her and I over the phone and through paperwork, and they took and put all the parts inside of a box and took it to Pan American Airways and flew it to San Francisco, and that's where I picked it up.
The flat 12?
No, it had no engine, no trans. Well, it was missing 9 pages of parts that they were supposed to supply.
Uh-huh. So did you put it all together and make a street version of it?
I drove it on the street.
How did you end up sourcing the engine and stuff? Where did that come from?
The engine I bought from. Yeah.
He went online.
The engine I bought through Alwyn at Andile.
And, okay.
Randy Townsend, Bruce Jenner and Randy Townsend used to race together.
Trans Am, probably. Yep.
And then I bought the car from him when he had wrecked, no, Willie Kausen in Europe wrecked a 917 Can-Am car with a 5.4 engine in it. And I bought that 5.4 engine from him, which was 660 horsepower. And I can remember that it was just a huge cube and, 24 spark plugs. I mean, just a very complicated engine.
Did you try to street it? I mean, I the thing would have had brake lights and headlights and turn signals, I guess.
Spare tire, a horn, a tool kit. Yes, it had all the safety, illegal equipment. The horn was off of a Honda motorcycle.
Really?
And you could hear it more inside the car than could outside the car.
Wow. And how long did you hang on to that car?
I had it for 5 years. I had to go through a process of getting the parts from Porsche. I had to sue the factory in order to win, and I got the parts because the factory had called Pollock and Stoddard and Peter Gregg and said, don't sell Mr. Valerio any parts because he's suing us.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of a...
Have you kept track of the car?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I sold it to Frank Jarman in Rockford, Illinois, and the dealership was owned by a guy, Morell. I don't remember his first name, but his wife's name was Diana or Deanna or something like that.
You remember the kids' names?
No.
But probably not important.
Yeah.
But so it's a 917, highly coveted, and obviously the ones with the race history, the ones with the Le Mans history, the ones that, you know, Steve McQueen used during the filming of Le Mans, you know, they're, you know, $25 million. I don't know. I mean, if you got Le Mans history in a 917 and a Gulf livery, it's $40 million. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
this one never had race history.
No,
it but it is in fact one of the last 917s produced.
Well, it was the last one made until Carl Thompson from Vosick Polak, the parts manager there, found 917 number 37. Just the frame and the body, where the factory had taken the frame over and then had the body put on it. And then Carl had all of Vosick's parts, which was monumental, and he right. assembled the car.
So where's the car living today, and like what form is it in?
It's still in the 917K form, still has the same engine, and it now has Le Mans history. You tell me how that was done, but it does.
How does it have Le Mans? I mean, they're just saying it.
Yeah, well, no, it has raced at Le Mans in the vintage racing over there.
Is it put in a livery, or is it just painted a solid color?
The last time I saw it, it was bright white with number 36 on it. Hmm. It went from Rockford, Illinois to Tom Congleton in Kansas City, and then he moved to Arizona. And then it went to a guy by the name of Rudy from Mexico City, and then Jeff Lewis.
So you've been following the car.
Yeah, well, people call me all the time wanting to know if they can buy it.
Uh-huh.
And
just say yes all the time.
What do you think that car is worth today, a 917 without history? Race
it does
history.
Have history.
Well,
classic Le Mans.
Just like numbers matching. You
know? Yeah.
So, but anyhow.
I mean, is that car $5 million? Up. $10 million? You think it's up?
I saw a guy get offered $20 million for one and he turned it down.
For one with history.
Yes.
Yeah. What famous. Do you think your car was worth?
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about your car. Yeah. Sorry.
I
wouldn't have said $5 million for, you know, Gulf livery.
Yeah. 20 years ago, they offered me $6.5 million for it when I didn't own it.
Oh,
really? You should have taken it.
Jesus Christ.
You should have taken that deal.
Yeah, I paid way too much for it. I bought it for $12,000.
Jesus Christ.
Well, without an engine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still have the 906?
No.
What was the first year of the Historics?
74.
And you brought the 906 out there?
Yeah.
And what was it like in 74? I mean, there's 100,000 plus people now. There's vendors. I'm sure there's nothing.
And a different track. Slightly different.
Yes.
Oh, that was the old configuration.
Yeah.
Old configuration.
Right. And it's turn 9 is a real SOB. You've got to really know how to take it to get by somebody. It was gravel parking lot. My car was number 123. I think I was the last entrant, and it was $150 to race.
Mm-hmm.
I towed it down with a borrowed pickup truck and a trailer that I borrowed from Dick Barber.
They charge you for it.
Yeah. No, no. I knew Mr. Barber's reputation, but, you know, it had Krager mag wheels on the trailer, and it looked like it was made out of old bridge paint and bridge primer and bridge parts. And we went down there, and I ran it, and Gurney, and I don't remember who he was talking to, but they were talking how to take turn 9, and I had never been on the course before, so I didn't know turn 9 from turn 7. So they said, come into it as hot as you can, push all three pedals to the floor, put it in the lowest gear you got, pitch it sideways, jump the inside brim, and you'll just tag them on the inside, because most of the other cars were big block Ford GT40s, a couple of Ferraris, McCafferty, I think was his name. He had the Bruce McLaren's orange.
Can-Am car?
No, it was the street car.
Oh,
and
they made those for a while.
Yeah.
Closed cockpit car, right? Yeah.
Looked similar to a GT40.
Uh-oh. Yeah, it was kind of McLaren had a little kit car to it, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Well, when I was driving that thing, the 917, it was the biggest car you could possibly imagine. It just felt like it was huge. Now you put it up against a 936 and all those new cars, and it's tiny.
Mm-hmm.
When you're sitting on the ground, sitting upright, your eyes are higher than you are when you're sitting in the 917.
Mm-hmm.
And I called it tunnel vision because the fenders were so high that you couldn't see the sides of you, but you could see directly in front.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you could tell how fast you were going is how much the fenders crushed down from the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And Hobbs drove it at Sears Point. I took it down to show Peter Gregg. He was interested in buying it.
The 917.
The 917. If I rattle on, it's just, you know. It's
That's interesting. Well, of course, we know because of the docs for sure. I mean, we know Peter Gregg and Hobbs and all these names, Dick Barber, all these names from the past.
Don't say the past. I was there.
Well, I would argue for Peter Gregg.
Yes.
Yeah.
It probably has been the past for a little while.
Yeah, shortly after that.
Yeah, he killed himself.
Yeah.
So you're at Laguna Seca, one of the first events, 1974. You haven't been on the track before. You come in third. You overhear a conversation with Gurney on kind of how to take a corner, and you fly your car through the corner,
yes,
basically catching air on the berm,
right?
And I guess it worked out.
Yeah, I got past the big block GT40 and the McLaren Coupe, and then I got right on the tail of a lime green IROC car, and I can remember looking at the back of his car, dancing in front of me, and I thought,
IROC,
God.
IROC 911 or IROC Camaro?
IROC 911.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the driver's name, but I thought, Jesus, he's going fast. And then I thought, I'm on his tail.
Yeah.
What am I doing here? So I followed him around, and the guy who won was Chris Amon
in a
512 Ferrari. Mm-hmm. And then there was the IROC, and then it was the 906.
512. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see some out there now. They're best-looking cars in race trim. They just look fantastic.
But the field that you were racing against is a cool field to you know, just Porsches and Ferraris and McLaren.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was open Ferraris. And at the top of turn, well, it was 6 and 6A, so what is it now? The corkscrew. There was the Porsche group, and then next to that was the Ferrari group. And you could see all the flags from all the different people. And this Ferrari open car, I don't know what model it was. I'm a Porsche guy. And I couldn't get by him. So I started flashing my lights, and all the Ferrari people were flipping me off, and all the Porsche people were yelling and waving their flags. And I finally got around him, and then I was able to make up some time.
Did you so the story that was chronicled in the doc about getting the Porsche and compressing it, cubing it up, and dropping it off at Newman's house or Redford's house?
Redford's house. No, it first it went to Newman's house.
Right.
Then it went to Redford's house.
How did you get involved with that tale?
Redford called my parents' house. And luckily, I was there, and my sister and my mom and I were just chatting. And the phone rang, and my sister picked it up. And the guy says, is George Valerio there? And she goes, well, which one? And it was kind of silence for a second. He says, well, the Porsche guy. Well, that's my brother. Can I tell him who's calling? And he goes, yeah, this is Bob Redford. So she handed me the phone, and then I saw her go, you know, right, mouthing it. And I said, yeah. And so he asked me if I knew of a rusted pile of junk Porsche that he could drop on Paul Newman's yard, and it was for a party of some sort. I don't know if it
Newman's
was
in Connecticut at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have a good friend, Gary Fairbanks. He says, "Oh yeah." He says, "I know exactly where he lives." He says, "I got the perfect car, $1,500."
Why did it have to be a Porsche?
Because Paul Newman, I guess.
What year was this?
tried to remember that. It's got to have been like 71 or 2, somewhere around in there.
Did Redford have a 903, 906? Damn. Said it in the movie.
Yeah, he said it in the movie. And so I'm sure he and Newman had some sort of Porsche story.
Oh, yeah, he had a 906, I think.
I think it was a 906.
If you show me a picture of a 906.
You can see Robert Redford Porsche. Yeah. 906.
So he was familiar with Porsche. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So you get one. Is it crushed yet?
No. It's a complete rusted hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw the car.
Yeah,
but
there it is.
My friend.
Yeah.
This is
that's a 904.
Oh,
that's
904. Damn it. 904.
That's yeah. Redford's car.
Yeah. I was going 906, 903.
904. Stupid. Or 906 had the gull wing doors.
Right.
And it was the first real race car that Porsche made.
Right, yeah.
The 904 was
right. 904
kind of
was
a street car,
right,
upgraded.
Right.
And the Daytona or the Dinos just blew their doors
and
off.
And that gave way to the 910, I guess, the 906. But go ahead.
The 910 is, that's or the 908/3, the flounder,
right,
is the
yeah.
best one.
Yeah.
But I had four 904s and three 906s and then the 917. I brokered a lot of the other cars,
mm-hmm.
but I never owned them.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go back to then, I don't know what happened after I got Fairbanks in touch with Redford.
Mm-hmm.
Gary said that he sold him the car for $1,500 and that he delivered the car at Paul Newman's house. And then the next time I heard the story was when on Jay Leno, when Paul Newman was talking about what he had done with the car.
And so he had it crushed.
Yes, he had it crushed.
This and was then, the episode of Leno where they raced the go-karts.
Yes, in the back,
yeah,
back
right.
holes.
Right.
Right.
There. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting getting the story. So it got dropped off as a sort of whole car.
Yeah.
And then it got crushed and then dropped
right.
off
Redford
again.
Redford drops it off at Newman's yard as a joke, as a gag. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, here's your crappy Porsche.
Yeah.
Happy
right.
birthday or whatever. Right. Here's a party. And then Newman grabs it, squishes it into a little block, somehow gets it into Redford's house. You were saying gated community, you know, locked door, and leaves it in the lobby area, the foyer of the house.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when we did the film, Redford was going, I rented the house.
Yeah, and put a big dent in the floor.
And it put a dent in the floor. So I had to pay for that as well. He said something about then he gave it to an artist or donated it to an artist and somebody made a sculpture out of it.
Yeah.
Is that right? That sounds
yeah.
right.
Yeah, somebody made a sculpture
but, you know,
out of it.
A complete Porsche only weighs about 1,800 pounds.
That was a shitty floor.
Yes, it must have been.
That's why he rented the house. He
must
didn't
have been
it.
One of those catch a contractor guys that did the floor.
Well, Newman, Redford was kind of funny because he said, and then I gave it to a sculptress, he said. And then he goes, she wasn't particularly good.
Yeah.
And had her make something out of it, and then maybe back to Newman's yard again. I can't, I can't recall.
Yeah, I guess it traded hands a few times between them as some sort of gag. But
so, what do you? I noticed you brought something kind of interesting out here. It's got a kind of a speedster. I don't know, 911 SC made into a speedster.
It's
I don't
a
know
73.
Oh, it's a 73
911 Targa. That I made into my own speedster. It's got a 3.6 with a G50, 88 suspension, 993 climate control, heating and air conditioning, 74 sports seats that I chopped the headrest down. I say 15 years, but my wife is rolling over in bed right now saying it was more like 20, George. And it took me 5 years to figure out what color to paint it. But typical Porsche guy, I could never leave it alone. It started out with a 3-liter, then it went to a 3.2, then it went to a 3.6, and I had standard air conditioning, and I thought, I want climate control. And so it never ended.
Is it carbureted?
No.
Oh, so it's injected.
It's all injected.
So it's it'll pass smog.
Oh yeah,
not I don't
Doesn't
know if it
need
needs
to. It's a 73.
Right, but
yeah.
but so it's kind of crate engine-y, yeah. so to speak.
Right.
Wow, and usable, drivable
everywhere.
Everywhere.
I've got probably 7,000 miles on it now. I took it to Monterey last year to the Concours on the Avenue and finished second place. The trophy that I got probably cost less than the gas it took me to take it down sure. there. But
yeah. You going up to Monterey this year?
Every year since 74.
Do you have when did you stop driving there?
I raced with a Sebring car in 2015.
Which Sebring car?
It was, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, GT Fiberglass from Minneapolis. He finished, I think it was second in the Porsche class at Sebring. And Bruce Canepa describes the car as a gas station-built race car. And the reason he won is because he kept running and everybody else broke.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the car in the end of May. No engine, no transmission, and it was bright yellow as though you dipped it.
What's the body on
72
it?
911.
Oh.
Made into look like an RSR.
Is what else do you have in your collection?
Well, I have a 72 ST that I'm a tribute car that I'm building, the Speedster.
What's an ST?
70, 71. Fat tired 2.5 liter race car that Porsche made, you know, all lightweight.
Mm.
It was the next car after the R.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really a fun car because they're still the old twitchy, lot of horsepower, swap ins real quick type car.
Mm-hmm.
But they're fun.
Does you have a shop? Are you doing it from home?
I kind of left the shop. I got tired of babysitting mechanics that worked for me. So I just said, hey, I'm going to just go home and do it myself. So my wife and I bought a 50-acre ranch just outside of Sacramento. And I have a 3,500-square-foot barn with three lifts in it. And it's possums and raccoons and bats yeah. and everything live there. But We all get along, and I've just been buying and selling cars for the last 25 years as my main source of income. I don't want to work on other people's cars anymore.
Was that your profession? I mean, if you said, what would your trade be, or what would you, if you're filling out an application and they went occupation, what would you have written 30 years ago?
Doofus.
Never.
Porsche.
Not electrician or an accountant.
No, but I took a test in Sacramento to be a water treatment specialist, and there was 2,300 people signed up for the test, and I finished fourth. And when I went in for the interview, the guy says, well, what college did you go to? And I said, I didn't. Well, you have to have a college degree in order to get this job. How'd you pass the test? I says, I answered the questions.
Yeah.
And so they didn't hire me for that, but they hired me for another job in the water treatment plant. And then I installed cultured marble. Mm. I owned a motorcycle shop from 69 to 72. I raced Class A Speedway bikes. I raced with Harvey Mushman, a.k.a. Steve McQueen.
Oh, right.
Yeah, we raced at Wilsonville.
Speedway, mm-hmm. the dirt track with no brake.
Nothing.
Well, Speedway was no brakes, right?
Nothing. Zero.
That was an English sport, was it not?
Yes.
Is that where it started?
The bike that I was riding, I bought from Al Lauer. Al Lauer had California dealer license number one. He way, way, way back.
Were those like BSAs?
No. It's a JAP.
The I don't think we're allowed to say that.
No, it's Jefferson Anderson Prescott.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. I thought we were talking about a Kawasaki.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The who was it? Bruce Penhall? Was that the guy
yep.
who was the
yep.
big
Chips?
Yes.
Yes.
You got a little Bruce Penhall in you, Matt.
Do I?
How you yeah, don't know who Bruce Penhall?
No.
He was this heartthrob.
Yep.
Oh yeah, I definitely got that.
Yes.
He was a guy who raced flat track or speedway.
Speedway.
Speedway. Flat track was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Speedway, but he was a Tiger Beat
guy.
It's funny. Chris just Googled him. This guy doesn't have a shirt on in any photo up there.
He was a champion motorcycle racer who was a little cute kind of, you know, like
surfer dude.
David Cassidy or something or Scott Baio, you know, but he wasn't in a sitcom. He was a motorcycle guy, but he was so, had these blue eyes and he was so California cute that they put him on Chips because he knew how to ride the bike. And I have no idea, you know, I have no idea what he's up to now, but it was a...
He's 400 pounds probably right now.
Got a little Matt, you know, they're both cute motorsport guys.
Yeah, the bike I rode was a 1939 Rotrax.
Really?
Yeah.
And again, it was like no brakes, no nothing, just pitch them sideways. At
39, did you even have brakes? Like, was that even an option?
Well, you didn't want to have brakes because if you had brakes, you could stop faster than somebody else and then there'd be a collision. But there were so many collisions anyway, it didn't matter.
Yeah, I guess it didn't matter.
But yeah, it was a...
There's the clutch, you pull it in, and you can hold the clutch for about 15 or 16 seconds, and then it overheats, and then the rear wheel starts going anyway.
Right.
And you go up to the start line, and you lean the bike over to the side so that the rear wheel is spinning, and you get the clutch out.
Right.
And then as soon as everybody's staged, you grab the clutch, push the bike over, and then you wait for the ribbons to go up in front of you, and then it's hang on for dear life because they're like 50 horsepower and maybe 210, 215 pounds. And I had never ridden the bike until I got into that first turn, and then it was like, and I let off the throttle, and the wheel is spinning at 100 miles an hour, and you're doing 30. And then when you let off the throttle, as the bike's slowing down, the wheel's still going faster, so it launches you forward again, and it raises the bike up like you're doing a wheelie in the middle of the turn.
Yeah.
And so we raced that in four laps. Four laps of that Class A racing was more tiring and exhausting than a 30-minute motocross.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, Bruce was champion, Chris, from, you know, 1970. Eight to
oh yeah, whatever. One world speedway champion in 81 and 82.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's later than that.
Yeah, you're right.
And then, I raced against the Basque brothers. They were back then. They had a welding shop up in Auburn, California.
They probably didn't wear shirts either.
No,
nobody wore shirts back then.
that's him.
There they are.
Yeah. That looks just like me.
And I'll bet you Bruce wasn't he wasn't 6'3". He was probably a shorter guy. A lot of those guys who rode those bikes couldn't be a big dude. You were kind of jockeys back then, the successful
I love
guys.
This publication, though, Teen Stars, with the stars he's got floating above him.
Yeah, I hope he may be 400 pounds a day. I have no idea. Pounds. He's doing something with motor. I'll bet you went to Europe and did something.
Porn.
Mm.
That's probably what it is. But he was kind of the motorcycle version of the F1 guy.
The hunky guy. You'll think
Hunt.
Of his name. Hunt. Yeah.
James Hunt, right?
What's he doing now?
Oh, I don't know. I'm seeing his 5'7".
5'7"? Oh,
of course. Yeah.
You're taller than him.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Maybe. All right. I'm saying. you're the same dude. Yeah, it was a crazy sport. They had it at Orange County. They had a track in Orange County, OCIR or whatever, International Raceway or something. Maybe that was the quarter mile. And then they had I will think of that
Ascot.
Ascot. I was thinking Agajarian or whatever. So they would promote it or whatever.
Agajarian.
But yeah. Ascot was the motorway, was the dirt track. I guess it was a quarter mile?
Well, they had all different sizes.
All different sizes.
Speedway. I can't remember. When I rode Speedway, it was inside of a horse arena.
Yeah.
With decomposed granite.
Oh, man.
And it's not a circle. It's you end up racing an oval.
Yeah.
Because you're always sideways and you're always on the gas.
Yeah. And, I don't know. You can see if you can find one of those Ascot commercials from the 79 or 80, if they put any of those things
I went to Ascot one time. got my doors blown off, and never went back.
Yeah,
by yeah, but you jumped on a bike for the first time. That's and crazy. You went racing. You went to Laguna Seca for the first time and finished third. Like, you must have had some skill behind the wheel or on a bike. Or
I think that my reflexes were the same speed as my brain, and they were very, very good. Now my reflexes are still that good, but my brain is going, I'd rather be at home having a glass of wine. I could get hurt doing this.
Bruce, if you want a glimpse into your future, Matt, Bruce Penhall is a VP and GM at Connor Concrete Cutting and Coring in Norco. So he's got Wait. Himself a wet saw with a diamond blade.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And he'll do coring.
Wait,
well.
How many C's was that? Was that CCC?
Connor Concrete Cutting and Coring. They should be in Corona, yes. But they're in yeah. Norco.
Yeah. Okay.
The horse capital of the world.
All right. Well, George, this has been a fun and interesting conversation. It, you know, oftentimes we throw a plug out for the guests, but I don't think you got a book coming out anytime soon, or a doc, or
my
a
wife
website.
Wants me, my wife would like me to write a book, because the stories that people say and that I talk about and what I did, it's...
I think it's book worthy.
I'd rather go drive.
Yeah, I would
well,
too. But
you write a book the way Adam does. You just say it all out loud into a recorder and then have somebody write it down.
No, not in a recorder. I do it while I'm driving.
On the phone. Yeah. Mike Lynch.
Not in a race car.
Well, George, she said you're supposed to pay me if you can to write me a book and get it into movies.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it, in advance is nice. George, good to meet you, my friend.
Thank you.
Springfield, tonight I'm doing a show, Springfield, Missouri. That'll be at the Blue Room Comedy Club, doing a live pod early and then stand-up show late, maybe a few tickets left. Kyle Dunnigan's going to join us on the live show. And also stand-up New York, The Stand in New York, July 20th, maybe a few tickets left there. Shane Gillis is going to join us, and Mark Norman, lots of good names. Matt, what do you got?
Just give me a follow at Moderator. We'll have some stuff posted up there soon for you guys.
So until next time, Sam Crawford, George Valerio, and Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.